The Infrastructure and Tourism Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Will Kiva please call the roll?
Chair Andrade?
Here.
Vice Chair Cheney?
Here.
Ranking Member Silvers?
Here.
Representatives Antone?
Here.
Burfield?
Present.
Brackett?
Here.
Daly?
Here.
Esposito?
Here.
DiLombardo?
Here.
Harris?
Here.
Lamarca? Lopez? Placencia?
Here.
Robinson?
Here.
Yeager?
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Good morning, members. Today we'll be hearing the governor's recommended budget for the next fiscal year, as well as two member bills. I'm confident that because the two member bills are road designations, they won't take too much time. So we will take up those first and then turn our focus to the highlight of our agenda to hear from our governor's office and state agencies about their proposed budget. We'll begin first with Vice Chair Cheney. Vice Chair, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Andrade. I am presenting House Bill 63 today, which is a road designation for a fallen Deputy Sheriff Michael Hartwick on part of the highway where he was slain when he was on duty by a vehicle, an operator of some heavy equipment. Deputy Hartwick succumbed to his injuries when he was struck by a front end loader while maintaining the construction project there on I-75 Olmerton near the Howard Franklin Bridge. Deputy Hartwick was working an overnight assignment directing traffic for construction work on I-75. He was outside his cruiser when the front end loader carrying concrete barrier hit him. The construction worker fled the scene but was apprehended 10 hours later. Another construction worker helped hide his vest and flee, was charged with accessory after the fact. Deputy Hartwick spent most of his adult life serving our community, first as a detention deputy in the Pinellas County Jail, then as a patrol deputy. He was the constant presence on the road, the sharp uniform and shining badge that told the world that there was always a protector in our midst. Our patrol deputies are the community's first line of defense, the first on the scene when something goes wrong. Deputy Hartwick wore his star with pride, and the people who worked with him respected his dedication and commitment to serving the public. His death is a senseless tragedy, but his life will be remembered forever in every law enforcement officer who patrols our streets. He was the emblem of all that is good and noble in a deputy sheriff, and he will not be forgotten. Deputy Hartwick served with the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office for 19 years. He is survived by his two sons and his mother. And that is the bill, and I would be grateful for your support.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Cheney, for that very moving presentation of your bill. Members, are there any questions? Any public testimony? Any debate, members, on this bill? No one wants to follow Representative Cheney's presentation, apparently. Seeing that, Representative Cheney, you're recognized to close.
Wave close.
All right. Kiva, please call the vote.
Chair Andrade?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cheney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Antone?
Yes.
Burfield?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Esposito?
Yes.
DiLombardo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Lamarca?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
And Yeager?
Emphatic yes.
15 yeas, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Congratulations, Representative Cheney, on your bill. The bill is reported favorably. Next up, we have Representative Tyler Sheroy to present House Bill 21. CS for House Bill 21.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, members. This bill designates the bridge, 405 Bridge in Brevard County, as the Dr. Sally Bride Memorial Bridge, honoring America's first female astronaut. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Sheroy. Members, are there any questions? Any public testimony? Any debate? Got a very active committee today. Seeing no debate, Representative Roy, you're recognized to close.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank you for your guidance and leadership. I know you share my affinity for aerospace and our military, and look forward to seeing this bill make it to the floor. Thank you, members.
All right. Thank you, Representative Roy. Keep it, please call the vote.
Chair Andrade?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cheney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Antone?
Yes.
Burfield?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Esposito?
Yes.
G. Lombardo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Lamarca?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Yeager?
Yes.
15 yeas, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Saroy. Congratulations. The bill is reported favorably. You are able to take off now. Members, now we will shift to the main event and hear the governor's recommended budget for fiscal year 2023-24. I'd like to recognize first Brian Mims, the policy coordinator for the governor's Office of Policy and Budget, to kick us off. Mr. Mims, you are recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members, and I have the clicker, and I hope that I operate it correctly. I can tell that it's going to be easy, but I will find a way of complicating it. I do thank you for allowing us to be here today, and they didn't put it in the script for me, but I wanted to recognize our staff from the TED unit and Office of Policy and Budget. They don't get a lot of accolades, but this is their day that they get nervous and have to come out in public. And I just want to tell you that they do a tremendous job. I am a newbie to the unit, actually 2 weeks into this job. And so I have relied heavily on them, and they are just consummate professionals. And I know I've found a good place to be. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to present the governor's Framework for Freedom recommended budget for fiscal year 2023-2024. We look forward to working with the legislature on these recommendations made by the governor and his legislative priorities over the course of the 2023 session. The Framework for Freedom budget totals $114.8 billion, as in a $3.8 billion increase over the current year's $110.9 billion budget. This chart presents an overall picture of the budget by policy area, first all funds, and then general revenue specifically. Health and Human Services maintains the largest portion of the overall budget with $47.6 billion, or 41% of the total state budget, to be spent on services that benefit our disabled, our children, and our seniors. $14.9 billion of this is general revenue. Education spending is the second largest funded area in the state budget. The governor proposes $30.4 billion, or 26.5% of the total state budget, to be spent on educating our children and those attending higher education institutions. The general revenue portion of education totals $19.4 billion, providing the education system with the largest portion of general revenue funds available at 45.6%. Transportation and economic development is the third largest funded in the state budget with $20.1 billion, or 17.3% of the total state budget, to be spent on transportation infrastructure and other community-based programs that benefit and support Florida's economy. The agencies that represent the TED, or Transportation and Economic Development Unit, are Florida Department of Economic Opportunity, Department of Transportation, Division of Emergency Management, Department of State, Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles, and Department of Military Affairs. The governor's Framework for Freedom budget includes $20.1 billion for transportation and economic development as follows. For Department of Transportation, $14.7 billion. Of that total, $13.4 billion funds the WERT program. The Division of Emergency Management, with $2.3 billion, of which $291 million is general revenue and $2 billion is trust fund. It provides funding for federally declared disasters, pre-disaster mitigation and flood mitigation programs, repetitive flood claims, severe repetitive loss programs, state match for federally declared disasters, and retrofitting hurricane shelters. The Department of Economic Opportunity with $2.3 billion, $378 million of which is coming from general revenue, $1.9 billion from trust fund. These funds support reemployment compensation, workforce services, economic development commitments, community development initiatives, including hurricane recovery, housing, public-private partnerships such as Enterprise Florida, Visit Florida, Space Florida, and CareerSource Florida. The Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles at $567.6 million, all trust fund dollars. And these funds go to support the Florida Highway Patrol and other departmental offices. The Department of State with $120 million, $85 million of which comes from GR, and $35 million in trust fund. It funds the goes to fund and support elections, corporation registration, libraries, cultural affairs, and historic preservation activities. Finally, the Department of Military Affairs with $186.7 million, of which $144.2 million comes from general revenue and $42.5 million is from trust funds. Funds there support preparedness for the Florida National Guard. This slide offers a breakdown by agency budget and positions. It reflects $959.4 million in general revenue, a total of $19.14 billion in trust, for a total ultimately of $20.1 billion. And this reflects a total FTE count of 13,484 positions. The first agency to present today the Governor's Framework for Freedom Budget for fiscal year 23-24 is the Department of Military Affairs. And joining us today, Mr. Chairman, is State Quartermaster Colonel Adam Curry.
Quartermaster Curry, you are recognized.
Good morning, Chairman Andrade, Ranking Member Silvers, and members of the Infrastructure and Tourism Appropriation Committee. Subcommittee. On behalf of the Adjutant General and the Director of the Florida State Guard, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Governor DeSantis for his recommended framework for freedom budget and the Florida Legislature for the continued support of your Florida National Guard. Your advocacy continues to enable us to successfully protect lives and property of our citizens when needed and to maintain readiness to accomplish our mission overseas. Over the past year, your commitment to provide resources has aided the Florida National Guard to respond swiftly to Hurricane Ian with over 5,000 guardsmen, bringing robust rotary wing aviation with life-saving commodities to the devastated Western Barrier Islands, and conduct ground search and rescue in the most impacted counties of our state. It also allowed us to provide 300 guardsmen to assist the Florida Department of Corrections as they continue to overcome historical personnel shortages. We were also able to conduct aerial surveillance of the southern portion of our maritime border borders in alliance with the Department of Emergency Management, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and other law enforcement partners. Additionally, we were able to deploy ready forces throughout the nation and overseas in support of our federal mission. We currently have nearly 300 soldiers and airmen supporting five combatant commands and another 250 scheduled for deployment later this year. These are just a very few of our accomplishments that this body has, your body has empowered, and we are thankful for your enduring support. As you can see on the first item of the governor's recommended budget list, is the first year of a five-year $476 million capital initiative at Camp Blanding, the premier training area of the Florida National Guard. The initial $178 million is to fund years one and two of this initiative, primarily to build new training and housing facilities at Camp Blanding. This funding will also construct live fire ranges, infantry battle courses, and barracks to support simultaneous training of up to 5,000 guardsmen. When complete, these enhancements will elevate Florida's force readiness and reduce our dependence on federal and other states' resources during emergencies. Moving into the second request on the list, the governor's budget proposes $7 million for the Revitalization and Modernization Program, or REVAMP. These funds will provide for year one of a renovation and remodeling initiative for the 63 readiness centers to meet safety standards and building code compliance. Moving to number three item, the readiness center maintenance and repairs request for $6.2 million is to support traditional everyday maintenance and repairs at readiness centers throughout the state. The fourth request, the Joint Enlistment Enhancement Program, or JEEP, is designed to recruit and retain guardsmen and the Florida National Guard. The funding provides $2 million for a one-time $1,000 bonus to guardsmen who renew their enlistment contract, and $1 million for a $1,000 bonus to guardsmen who recruit new members into the Florida National Guard. The Framework for Freedom budget also increases funding for the National Guard Tuition Assistance Program by $3 million to a total of $6.2 million and expands the program to allow for the benefit to be transferred to a spouse or child, if unused, by the member of the National Guard. The last request, the last request item on the list focuses on replacing old and dilapidated equipment that supports not just the armories, but the entire 72,000 acres of Camp Landing Joint Training Center. Similar to the Florida National Guard recommended budget, the Governor's recommended Framework for Freedom budget for the Florida State Guard focuses on providing additional capacity and capabilities in support of the citizens of Florida during state emergencies. The Governor recommends more than $98 million for Florida State Guard to support the training, compensation, and equipment for up to 1,500 volunteer members. These funds will provide for 10 positions to staff the State Guard leadership, $19 million for volunteer onboarding, training, and equipment, $3 million for maritime equipment and operations, $50 million to aviation equipment and operations, and $22 million for storage facilities for assets of the Florida State Guard. Chair Andrade, committee members, thank you again for the opportunity to brief the Florida National Guard and Florida State Guard on the recommended Governor's Framework for Freedom budget. I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have at this time.
Thank you. Thank you, Colonel. And yes, members, just for the ease of clarification for today, after each presenter, I'll open up for questions just so that y'all don't have to come back to the mic at the end of the presentation. So, members, any questions? Representative Daly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Colonel. I want to start off by thanking the Governor's Office for particularly the improvements. The dollars recommended for improvements at Camp Landing, haven't had the opportunity to go out there and tour it with Representative Payne last year in the TAG. It's a heck of a facility, but it needs a lot of help and a lot of work, and I'm glad to see that that has been recommended, and I hope that we can make good on those recommendations as well and the other funding that the Guard specifically has asked for. I did have a couple questions that related to the Florida State Guard. I know originally when we authorized that last year, we had set a cap. I think that cap was lower than 1,500 members. So first and foremost, how many members of the State Guard are there now? And then when we're talking about maritime equipment operations, aviation equipment operations, what exactly, if you could kind of just drill in a little bit more onto what specifically that would include, because my understanding of the Florida State Guard last year was that it was supposed to be sort of an auxiliary, if you will, of the Guard and not have weapons training or anything similar to that. I don't know if they get that or not. If you could kind of just go over an overview and kind of maybe drill into those couple areas, I'd appreciate it.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Appreciate it, sir. I think one of your first questions, the original cap was 400. I think over the last year, we've realized through the Florida National Guard's multiple mobilizations that building additional capacity and capability, not just to the Florida National Guard, but across the state, to include other agencies and be more of a force multiplier for those agencies. We really wanted to build greater flexible response options within the Florida State Guard, because the Florida National Guard does have certain authority restrictions on it. The last question I think you asked was how many currently have. We have nine total as far as leadership-wise, four full-timers, but we expect to bring in the full 400 that's authorized by the end of the fiscal year.
Recognized. for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Colonel. And so I'm sorry, I should have broken up my questions. I just had a cup of coffee, and I am amped. If you could, just a little bit more into what that – so when we're saying aviation equipment, are we providing them aircraft? Are we providing – I mean, my understanding was they were going to help. Obviously, I think better than a lot of the folks here understand a lot of the force structure issues that you've been having as the person who has been trying to get Congress to increase your force structure. So I certainly understand that, and you're doing the best you can with what you have. I certainly understand. My concern is from the Florida State Guard perspective, what are we allowing that – subsection, I guess, of the National Guard to do. I don't know if you call it a subsection or not, but you could go into that a little bit more.
Recognize.
To clarify, the Florida State Guard actually reports straight to the governor, and during an emergency will be through the state coordinating officer. So as far as the Florida National Guard is concerned, Department of Military Affairs specifically, we're an administrative function, so we basically will look at helping them purchase the equipment that they have, whatever it may be, administratively across the board. So I just want to make sure I clarify that. And as far as the equipment, yes, there's going to be fixed-wing aircraft, rotor-wing aircraft, along with all the support structure that comes with that, along with UAVs as part of that.
One final follow-up, yes. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for my final follow-up. I appreciate the clarification, and if we could at some point, and maybe, Chairman, you could tell me who the right person is. I understand you're the administrative person for them. Thank you for that clarification, Colonel. Certainly not trying to put you in the hot seat. I'm a fan of you and your entire team and what you guys do. I'd just like to kind of get to the bottom of that as far as the State Guard's concerned. So thank you again, and I'll be pleased to support you you guys moving forward.
Thank you very much. Representative G. Lombardo, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you all for coming and presenting this. As a guardman, I appreciate all the work that you guys done, and I know some of these buildings that you're asking for and some of the capital improvements, I've slept in them and they suck. So I appreciate you guys trying to improve them. Just a couple of quick questions on regards to federal funding and how that works. Can you kind of break down like the percentage of the federal share? Do they pay for capital improvements? We'll just start with that. And then how are they also helping out with Camp Landing?
You recognize.
Thank you, sir. The bottom line is the federals do provide funding. They provide funding to Camp Landing, approximately $8 million in capital improvement items per year. That doesn't necessarily touch on this particular budget. So the feds do provide. And if I go into a little bit more detail on the five-year plan, there's multiple MILCON projects on the outlier years that we expect will come through and will possibly drop off of what the state requirement for the funding is.
You recognize.
Do we get to ask or more federal funding? Do you guys, is that even a thing? If there's, do you guys have more requirements for the Guard? Do you guys get to submit a request to the feds?
We request it every year. Unfunded requests. We ask every year. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Antone. No questions. All right. So to clarify, the phase two portion of the Camp Landing training facility, that's 100% state funds?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. Any other questions for the Colonel? All right. Well, thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, presenting for the Florida Department of Transportation is Secretary Jerry Perdue.
Right. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Thank you so much. Incredibly grateful for the governor's continued leadership in transportation infrastructure. As you can see here, we have another record budget in transportation as part of his Framework for Freedom budget at $14.7 billion. That is actually close to $2 billion more than our last record historic budget. So incredibly grateful for that leadership. As part of that budget, $13.4 billion is for our work program. And just to kind of go through real quick a breakdown, please don't try to add up the numbers in this slide. They don't add up to the 14.7, but this is more or less to highlight the diversity of our portfolio and some of the more important strategic investments that we make in our work program. As you can see here, $5.4 billion is slated for highway construction. This is typically going to be like your capacity projects, expansion of roads and bridges. $1.6 billion for resurfacing, over 2,600 lane miles. This is something that we're very proud of here in the state of Florida. We take very seriously the maintenance of the assets that we've already deployed. $550 million for bridge repair and replacement. We take bridges very seriously here in this state, and we maintain our bridges at a very high level. You can see over $400 million for aviation improvements, $150 million for seaports. And with the seaport program, this is actually nearly $100 million more than what's statutorily required, because they are a very strategic partner of ours, play a big role in the supply chain, and are continuing to deploy infrastructure that's needed so that Florida can stay resilient for the future. Then also with our safety initiatives, nearly $236 million. This is a standalone safety program. Safety is actually our top priority. It's a part of everything that we do. Safety is the number one priority on every single project, but we also have this set-aside program that is exclusive safety projects for those needs that arise, and we have several statewide initiatives that we are certainly rolling out that we're very proud of. Additionally, extremely excited to rise to the challenge. Again, with Governor DeSantis's bold leadership and his bold vision, people are continuing to flock to the free state of Florida. This certainly places an increased demand on our transportation system. There is severe congestion throughout the state, and so one of the ways you solve that is by advancing critical congestion relief projects throughout the state. So the governor rolled out his vision for the Moving Florida Forward proposal. This includes a cash injection of $4 billion from general revenue surplus to come into our work program up front, which we will then utilize to leverage an additional $3 billion for a total of $7 billion. It advances 20 major congestion relief projects across the state that many of them you would not see delivered for another 15 to 20 years. So this is a historic investment in transportation. It's one unlike I've seen in my 20-year career here at FDOT. So we're very excited to rise to the challenge and bring this congestion relief to Floridians and continue to deliver the quality of life that Floridians know and love. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Secretary. Members, are there any questions? Representative Lamarca, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Secretary, first of all, appreciate you making yourself so accessible and available in Broward County, especially at Port Everglades Association. I have two questions, if I might, Mr. Chair. Clearly, by your budget and your investment in ports, would you agree that ports, along with airports, are a huge economic engine for our state?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative, for your question. Absolutely. We value our partnership with both airports and seaports dearly. They have a direct impact on quality of life, economic growth, and the communities that they reside within. So they're a very important strategic partner for us.
Thank you. Quick follow-up, if I could. That was a serious question. The other question is, you think in the governor's overall budget, you could figure out how to get as many miles out of all of our state vehicles as you do out of your own?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative. That is certainly a pride and joy of mine. For those of you who don't know, our family vehicle is a 2000 model Ford Excursion with 571,000 miles on it. So,
all right, Representative Esposito, you're recognized.
Thank you, Secretary, for being here with us. You've been phenomenal in answering all of my many questions behind the scenes as well. With this plan, do you have the necessary resources to implement the plan without affecting the work program and the current projects?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative. So one of the critical components of delivering infrastructure is actually labor. We need people to build projects. So workforce development has become a strategic focus of ours. We continue to partner with our industry, and we're going to have to continue investing in that workforce and in that job market, both internal to FDOT and also for the industry as a whole.
What specific positions do you need? Like, if we were to add them to, say, a master credential list, what specific positions do you need?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative. We need all of them. However, you know, there are some that are very critical in terms of delivering infrastructure, and those directly connected to project delivery have become important. A lot of these, even state employees in project delivery, are managing contracts worth millions, if not billions of dollars. And so, you know, continuing to attract the level of talent and retain that talent is extremely important as stewards of tax dollars.
Any follow-up? All right, Representative Daly, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Secretary. I just want to first and foremost thank you for number two on this list, Southwest 10th. That is a 60, 70-year fight in South Florida, and I know that my district and all the districts that are west of I-95, thank you in Broward County for that. And then two, as somebody that doesn't routinely drive to Tallahassee, but I know a lot of our folks do, is 10 the area where we all seem to get dead stopped in traffic on the way to Tallahassee these days?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative, for your comment. I would like to highlight that Southwest 10th Street Interchange resides in our District 4 in Southeast Florida. Their work program for this coming budget cycle is actually over $1 billion just in that district alone. So we're very excited about congestion relief down there. Also, yes, sir, the I-75 expansion is for Central Florida and mostly in Marion County. That's actually to add lanes and widen to alleviate the congestion that occurs there that I'm sure many of you, as well as myself, get stuck in often. You really don't know how long your drive is going to take because of that section of I-75. And it's even more critical in times of emergency when we're trying to evacuate people. And so that's definitely a strategic investment.
Members, any further questions? Representative Brackett, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your list 1 through 20, is that a prioritized list?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative. No, sir, that is not a prioritized list. The numbering system is just simply there to reference the projects on the map with the actual description.
One follow-up. Also, it's great the money's there, the $7 billion. Are you concerned at all about the problematic situation with getting it done in 4 years based on manpower situation and workforce?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative. That's actually a great question. So one of the ways this proposal is set up is to deploy this $7 billion over a four-year period. They will not be fully constructed. They will just simply start construction over the next 4 years. That gives the industry time to prepare and ramp up so that we have the materials, equipment, and labor necessary to deliver. And so the proposal has been put together strategically so that our industry here in the state of Florida can respond and deliver.
All right. Thank you very much. Members, any further questions for FDOT? All right. Well, thank you very much, Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee members.
I apologize. Vice Chair Cheney, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair Andrade. I apologize if I missed this. I didn't think I heard you say how you prioritize these projects.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Vice Chair Cheney. So these projects are projects that are already in our pipeline in some form or fashion. And so the way our planning process works, it's grassroots. It starts at the local level, and they're conceived at the local level. They're prioritized there. So every project that we fund is first prioritized by the locals. So these are projects that are already in some phase that are advanced far enough along in their life to actually be accelerated for construction. And so they're high priorities. They're located within high growth areas. You know, as an example, the build out of I-4 in Central Florida, which we all know is desperately needed, that is one of those that, you know, we've been planning that project for 15 years now. And so the only challenge is the funding. And so this plan provides that funding to advance it.
So that list that you have there, is there any order of priority on that list, or all of those projects are going to happen somewhat simultaneously depending on staffing and funding? Is that what you're telling us?
So, Mr. Chairman, thank you, Vice Chair Cheney. So the Moving Florida Forward proposal fully funds all of these projects over the next 4 years. The numbering system is just simply for identification on the map. It's not priority order. However, the projects, you know, how they're delivered over the next 4 years is based on where they are in their schedules and the workload of each region of the state. So it's very strategically put together. In terms of like budget, so for this, you know, $2.5 billion of the $7 billion is planned to be delivered in this upcoming fiscal year. So.
One more quick question. So in my district, Pinellas County, big tourist district, and it I know you've got this very complex schedule that's statewide, but my constituents are always asking, why do we always have these road projects during spring break and high tourism area time? So could you just address that?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Vice Chair Cheney. So with any exciting infrastructure announcement comes the opportunity to actually have to build that project. As we all know, that means that many of our customers will be driving through construction for years to come. As we grow and continue to expand infrastructure to keep up with that growth, construction is absolutely necessary. It's the necessary part of the end game, which is, you know, quality of life and congestion relief. And so the Tampa region definitely, Vice Chair Cheney, is growing exponentially. We already have over $1 billion worth of construction underway there. You know, West Shore Interchange is the newest big project that has started. And so there's going to be construction there for many years to come. But, you know, I think what we can celebrate is both the governor and your continued investments in infrastructure. It's going to continue to place Florida as a nationwide leader.
All right. Members, any other questions? All right. Thank you, Secretary.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, our next presentation comes from the Department of Economic Opportunity, Acting Secretary Meredith Ivey.
Mr. Chair. Good morning, Chair Andrade, Vice Chair Cheney, members of the committee. It's an honor to present Governor DeSantis's economic investments and his Framework for Freedom budget. DEO's mission is to champion initiatives that support generational economic growth for Florida citizens, businesses, and communities. I am joined here today by representatives from our public-private partners, Career Source Florida, Enterprise Florida, Florida Housing Finance Corporation, Space Florida, and Visit Florida. Governor DeSantis's budget provides $502.7 million in affordable housing and workforce housing initiatives, including $402.7 million to fully fund the Sadowski Affordable Housing Trust Fund, with $121.7 million for the State Apartment Incentive Loan Program, also known as SALE, and $281 million for the State Housing Initiatives Partnership Program, known as SHIP, through our partner, FHFC. Additionally, $100 million is being provided for the second year of the very successful Hometown Heroes Program, which assists eligible homeowners with closing costs and down payment assistance. $362.6 million is being provided for Community Development Block Grants, or CDBG funds, for local hurricane recovery and hardening efforts across the state. We are grateful to Governor DeSantis for implementing language in his budget, which will allow DEO to request additional budget authority if needed in the upcoming fiscal year to meet any additional contractual obligations. As you all know, disaster recovery funding is a huge priority for our agency. In this calendar year, we are on track to close out programs in Hurricane Michael, Hurricane Irma, Hurricanes Hermine and Matthew, as well as the Housing Repair and Replacement Program in Hurricane Michael. We are pleased to report that we have launched the application cycles for Hurricane Sally infrastructure and voluntary home buyout, with more programs coming online in the coming months. We are also poised and ready to support Southwest Florida as we await a federal allocation from U.S. Congress. $100 million is provided in the governor's budget for the Florida Job Growth Grant Fund to support economic growth by providing local areas with funding for public infrastructure projects and also workforce training programs. Since taking office, Governor DeSantis has awarded more than $134.6 million to 41 projects across the state. $100 million is being provided to continue the state's marketing and promotional efforts through our partner at Visit Florida. The budget provides $170.9 million for the second phase of the state's Small Business Credit Initiative, which provides small businesses with access to capital. Just last month, DEO announced that $142 million is available to businesses, including very small businesses and sole proprietors. So these are the phase two funds that will allow us to keep that access to capital going into the second fiscal year. $30 million is being provided in the governor's budget for the second year of bonus payments to law enforcement officers who are new to the profession in the state, including those who are relocating from states across the country. I'm proud to report that in our first year of administering this new program, under the leadership of the governor, this committee, and the legislature, we've already awarded over 1,200 newly sworn law enforcement officers with $5,000 bonuses after taxes. We have not done this alone, and we greatly appreciate the ongoing support of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, the Sheriff's Association, the Police Chiefs Association, as well as hundreds of employers across the state. $100 million is being provided in the governor's budget for the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment, also known as the BEAD program, to expand high-quality internet access deployment in rural communities. Again, this is the minimum level of federal funding the state expects to receive, but this will position us to get that program up and running when that allocation does come down from the feds. And on a separate note, Governor DeSantis recently announced the first awards through the state-funded Broadband Opportunity Grant Program. $144 million was awarded to 58 projects across 41 counties, creating access to over 160,000 homes, with more to come. Finally, with assistance to households across the state, the governor's budget provides an increase of $18.4 million to the recurring base funding for the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, which helps income-qualified families with home heating and cooling costs or utility costs, $37.5 million for the Low-Income Household Water Assistance Program to assist families with water and wastewater costs, $21.9 million for the Weatherization Assistance Program to help low-income Floridians reduce their monthly energy costs, and $1.5 million to increase the recurring base funding of this program. DEO is honored to continue advancing Governor DeSantis' economic development mission. We appreciate the support of everyone on this committee, and I'm happy to take any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, are there any questions? Representative Esposito, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. On the Hometown Heroes project, how much of the $100 million has been distributed or will be distributed by the end of the fiscal year?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to delegate this question to representative from Florida Housing.
Thank you very much, sir. Just please make sure to fill out a speaker form afterwards. But you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Andrade. And David Westcott, I'm the Managing Director of Homeowner Programs at Florida Housing. And as of Monday of this week, we've allocated over $55 million of the original $100 million. And that has helped leverage over $1.1 billion in first mortgage loans that are made by lenders throughout the state.
Thank you. Any follow-up?
Yes, please. How are you defining success of the program, and are you confident that you can distribute the remaining dollars before the next fiscal year?
Chair. Yes, so we keep track every week. And, of course, when interest rates were 4.5%, the money was moving much more quickly than when interest rates have risen. Right now, we're projecting that the $100 million will probably all be spent in August, so not quite by the end of the fiscal year, but very close.
Any follow-up?
How are you defining success of the program?
Generally by, how well it is used, and that weekly number of homebuyers who are working with our participating lenders and having contracts on homes and making the reservations, and then those loans actually getting through to closing.
If you'll indulge me, I have some Enterprise Florida questions.
Sure.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
On Enterprise Florida, how much of the operating costs are coming from the state budget?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to invite their Chief of Staff, Tyler Russell, up to answer that question.
Absolutely. Good morning, Mr. Russell. Please just make sure to fill out a speaker format.
Will do.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. So I can get you the exact breakdown, but it's about 50% of our annual operating budget.
And how many employees do you guys have there?
In between 80 and 90. I can get you that exact number as well. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
You're fine.
One last question, if you'll.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So in last year's budget, there was a recommended $2.4 million reduction to Enterprise Florida, and in this year's budget, there's a recommended increase of $4.1 million. What has changed to encourage that increase?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think the change in the budget is due to the organization coming out of COVID and the strength of Florida's economy, us dealing with more projects, both domestically and internationally.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And members, any other questions? All right, Representative Burfield, you are recognized.
Thank you. Actually, it's a follow-up in reference to the Hometown Heroes. Sorry. Besides the high inflation rates, are there other hurdles that we need to look at removing, or is it just predominantly that component that's being a challenge?
Chair, the increasing first mortgage interest rates, of course, are, you know, the main item. As projections are that, you know, in the future, the economy is expected to worsen, you know, that that affects things in the secondary markets as well. So, again, that mostly deals with first mortgage interest rates. But as far as the enthusiasm for, you know, the Hometown Heroes for the program and you know, the participation of well over 150 participating lender institutions throughout Florida, you know, we're very happy and encouraged with the interest in the program. And, you know, as long as folks can still continue to qualify for the first mortgage amount needed, this down payment and closing cost assistance really helps get them over the finish line.
Members, any further questions? Representative Cheney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Andrade. Thank you for the presentation. As I said before, I'm from Pinellas County, so big tourism area. We've been experiencing record tourism over the last few years, and I see quite a significant increase in Visit Florida. Now, I believe in marketing. I was just curious why. I think that's almost double from where we were last year. Can you address that?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to invite up Katie Juckett from Visit Florida, but I think that overall with the tourism dollars, you want to keep that momentum going, but I'm also happy to have Katie come up to provide some further context.
Thank you for bringing the whole team today, by the way.
You're welcome. Team makes it all work.
Hi, Chair.
Good morning. You're recognized.
Thank you. Vice Chair Cheney, you are right. Tourism is going really well, but we don't want to take our foot off the gas there. We know the return on investment is $3.27 for every dollar that you all are investing. We also have the damage from the hurricane. The state is performing well, but Southwest Florida is suffering. So we want to make sure that we are helping there as well. Additionally, you know, we're very fortunate to be in the market when there was not a lot of competition during the rebound and recovery initially. That's really no longer the case. We have a lot more competition right now. So while we were able to gain a ton of market share, we want to make sure that we're continuing. You know, you can look at the numbers and go, oh, it's really great. Can we kind of back off? But those numbers are based on less competition than we have now. So in order to maintain what we have and grow it, we need to fund at that kind of a level.
Any follow-up? All right. Vice Chair Cheney, you are recognized.
Thank you. So have you adjusted your target post-COVID given the new market environment that you just expressed?
I would definitely want to get back to you and consult with the marketing team on that. I would just say that international is an area room for growth. Domestically, we're really strong because that was the area, you know, those were the visitors we could bring in. But now that international is opened up more, we know traditionally that the international visitors stay longer and spend twice as much money when they're here. So that is a really important area for us to double down in now that it's a greater opportunity for us.
You're recognized.
Thank you. One last quick one. And so who do you consider our competitors or our top competitors for tourism?
Well, there are many. I'd like to get back to you on that one if I can. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Representative Esposito, you're recognized for another bite of the apple.
Thank you, Chair. So you mentioned Southwest Florida is suffering. I'm in Lee County. Can you describe what you're seeing in your perspective of how we're suffering from a tourism standpoint?
I don't have those numbers with me today, but I can tell you that we're rolling out different phases of rebound and recovery and in very close communication with the folks that are on the ground there dealing with everything. And so we're constantly pivoting to help and make sure we're providing what is timely and appropriate and most helpful.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions? All right. Representative Lopez, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
I wanted to follow up on your comment on the international. Mm-hmm. So I understand that some of the countries have now imposed some visa issues. Can you get me a list of those countries that we have, in fact, always worked on and have come, and now what's happening with the imposition of those visas?
Absolutely, yes. The visa wait times are off the charts, and I'd be happy to get you that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Members, any further questions? All right. Thank you guys very much. Just please just remember to fill out a speaker form.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, next up is the Director for Division of Emergency Management, Kevin Guthrie.
Good morning, and thank you for having me here today. For those that don't know me, my name is Kevin Guthrie. I've served as a director since about this time, 2021. I'm happy to be here with you today to present our portion of the governor's framework for freedom budget. I want to begin by saying last year, the Florida legislature, even more specifically this subcommittee, was a great partner and entrusted the division with $2.7 million in one-time funding to build out an IT network that would help us respond to and recover from disasters more quickly. As we talk about returns on investment, that $2.7 million that you entrusted us with has netted $1.4 billion in the first 120 days of this disaster. Last time I was with you, I told you that number was $514 million, but we received notification this week from FEMA that due to our efforts and due to our streamlined processes and due to our technology, I am happy to say that there's estimated $930 million of mitigation and resiliency money coming to the state of Florida next year. I'll start, Chairman, with the open federally declared disasters. To begin with, the governor has recommended in this year's budget $2.1 billion in trust fund authority and $224 million in state funds for the division to fulfill our obligations needed to close out federally declared disasters. We have currently open over 30 disasters in the state of Florida, ranging back to 2004. Next, the governor has recommended $117 million for the construction of three new warehouses, as well as $2.4 million to fulfill temporary warehouse spacing needs for commodity storage. I have previously presented on our warehousing needs before the House TED Committee, but to summarize, the division currently maintains three warehouses in Orlando, Tallahassee, and Lakeland that store the bulk of our state emergency response food and water, along with millions of personal protective equipment items. As the division continues to serve as a primary supplier procurement entity of disaster and emergency goods and services, and as Florida population continues to increase by 1,000 each day, we project that these funds will allow the division to establish a long-term warehouse solution for the next decades. We currently project that three warehouse facilities totaling approximately 650,000 square feet of climate-controlled space located throughout Florida will serve Florida's citizens best. Next, enterprise business solutions. You already heard me talk about the $2.7 million investment, but I'm excited to take it another step further this year. The division currently manages 20 state and federal grants, many of which require 40-plus hours of training. And at any one point, the division is managing well over 10,000 grant agreements and contracts. The governor has recommended a total of $6.8 million to build on the $2.7 from last year to modernize our internal holistic grant management, business process, system issue, and digitalization projects. During previous presentations, I've mentioned several times that the governor and the legislature's prior investments in our technology for the division are directly correlated with our ability to successfully carry out our fastest response on record in Hurricanes Ian and Nicole. I'll reiterate that for those that may not have heard it. In the first 100 days, I'll now say 120 days, of any previous disaster in the history of the state of Florida, $0 have been paid out. We have paid out over $511 million in Ian and Nicole, and again, I think it's just worth reiterating, secured $1.4 billion for the state of Florida. Information technology, I'm sorry, I skipped a spot. A continued recurring investment is what we're asking for here, which will allow for us to expedite funding back to your cities and your counties and allow the division to maintain operational readiness for the State Emergency Operations Center. Information technology and sustainment is our next topic. Next, the Governor DeSantis and his leadership has recommended $5.6 million for information technology sustainment. This recurring includes $2.54 million to grant WebEOC access to cities. I want to stop there for just a second. Today, cities in your jurisdictions do not have direct access to input missions to counties that in turn come to the state. They have to literally be put in on two separate non-communicative systems. This would streamline that process, again, allowing us to know better what's going on at the local level to then obligate funding and encumber expenses. Last one is $3 million in licensing sustainment. This would go to Salesforce, Microsoft, WebEOC, etc. Last, the governor has recommended $1.9 million for the conversion of 35 OPS temporary positions to FTA permanent positions. The division has less than 200 full-time equivalent positions. Additionally, we have 166 OPS employees, or nearly one half of our current workforce is OPS personnel. We have employees who are mission critical to the division, however, they remain classified as temporary OPS. Some have been with the position in these positions for over a decade. I'll mention one example I gave last year. Maurice Black in our IT unit was a help desk person, 17 years as an OPS employee before last year's budget, we converted him to a full-time equivalent employee. And I want to publicly acknowledge Maurice's great work that he does for us on a day-to-day basis. Each employee, including our OPS employees, must undergo 56 hours of entry-level FEMA training to familiarize themselves with emergency management and the many components encompassed at the county, state, and federal levels. Why is that important? When we give them that 56 hours of training, if they got to go to some other location, they have to have that 56 hours of training there as well. So we're training our workforce, in essence, in times to leave us. We understand that we must be able to compete with federal and private sector emergency management employers. However, in recent years, we are even having to compete with other state agencies. With this ask, we are hoping to convert as many of our OPS personnel, who are mission critical staff for the division, to FTE to give those employees the image of a desire for them to be long-term staffing at the division. Chairman, this concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Members, Representative Lamarca, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Director Guthrie. I think it's worth mentioning that from the minute you came on, kind of in the middle of tail end of COVID, if you will, you've been extremely accessible and active. You're on the Sunday shows back in Broward a lot, keeping us up to date with what's going on. I have two questions. One is, I know that in the previous budget, unless I missed when you were explaining it, the new EOC, what's the progress of that? And the second question is, you explained the conversion of OPS to FTE. Does your organization still use outside employment or, you know, temporaries, that type of thing?
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Representative LaMarca, for the question. So the first question is, we are pulling permits with the City of Tallahassee, Leon County, to go ahead and break ground on that new EOC. We are having to make some modifications and adjustments to that EOC based on inflation and based on construction trends and the fact that raw materials are going through the roof. That building was originally supposed to be a what we call an ICC 200 building. In other words, the entire building itself would take up to 200-mile-an-hour winds. We're going to have to make some adjustments on that to where the core critical infrastructure will only be at ICC 200. And we thought that was the right thing to do, along with our partners at DMS, versus come back to this body and ask for additional funding when you have already so graciously given us additional funding for the hardening of that building. So we're making some modifications there. My hope, DMS's hope, is that we will be breaking ground, I believe, in spring of next year. Yes. Okay. My chief of staff is saying roughly spring. I think it's going to be probably first quarter of 2024 that we'll actually break ground. You may see some land clearing and so on, maybe some infrastructure, but actual break ground on the building, it'll be then. Did I address both of your questions, sir? I think you had one more.
The other one was regarding any outside positions. Yep. Are you still using that type of thing?
So, Representative LaMarca, yes, we are. So we still have, for instance, right now with the 30 open disasters that we have, we have probably, and I would have to verify this number for you, but I'm okay with making this guess. I'm going to say somewhere between 400 and 500 contract staff, in addition to the 166 OPS staff that we use to handle all of the issues that are going on.
Thank you. Representative Gene Lombardo, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Director. So you mentioned some technology that you're purchasing that says you can communicate, the cities will be able to communicate directly to the state through WebEOC. Is that correct?
Sure. So the short answer to that question is yes. However, there needs to be a very important caveat so that I don't have 66 counties yell and scream at me. What we're trying to do is get a seamless system to where when they put that mission in, our logistics section knows there's their potential that may come to the division. We don't have that visibility today. However, every mission that comes from the city to the county will have to approve and forward on to the state. But now that will be in one seamless system.
Thank you. I'll tell you right now, that was a huge problem where I was. I mean, we had 40, 50 missions that weren't even touched by the county. I literally had to pick up the phone and call the governor's office every time to try to get it through the county to the state. So I think that would be very helpful for the next storm. Thank you.
Chair, if I may follow up. It was because of your partnership and me and you working the way that we did that I realized how important that issue was, especially yourself and your constituents. So that's why we wanted to go ahead and try to get this into this year's budget so we have that transparency. We know that it's potentially coming, and then we can also work proactively from the state down to the county to ask if that mission is going to be pushed through.
Thank you. Members, Representative Burfield, recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to talk about the state mitigation grant program. I believe there's $6.4 million recommendation that is a part of the budget. And my curiosity is, I believe that DEO had received about $680 million in HUD mitigation funding. And so what my interest is this intended, the money that the state is requesting, to create a state-sponsored form of the federal grant program, or will it be duplicating those DOE activities?
Just one second, sir. So, Chair, I just want to make the six point, I think you said four, ma'am.
$4 million.
I'm not familiar with that being specific to mitigation, other than the fact that I believe we might be requesting authority to use a federal program to go and execute on some specific mitigation match type program. So what I'm saying by that is there are some mitigation programs. I believe there was four in our initial budget that may have totaled $6.5 million. Those require a state match. This would be that match to those mitigation programs. There is a complete difference between the FEMA Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, which has a 75-25 match program, 75 federal, 25% match, and then DEO's CDBG-DR MIT program, which has a $0 match.
So, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So who would then be eligible for the ones that would be coming through your department?
Sure. So the mitigation that is eligible through our program starts at the local level, and I think that's one of the big differences between DEO's program and DEM's program. We currently have about $1.7 billion currently in hazard mitigation grant money over about the last six disasters that we're currently working. That money starts at the local level. The local counties have what they call a local mitigation strategy team or a task force. They accept and rank projects at their level. They then turn those into the state. The state then does what we call a benefit cost analysis on that particular project to determine if it is eligible to go on to FEMA for potential funding. That is our program. So our program is rooted at the local level and starts and ends at the local level. We are pass-through entities approving projects, recommending them to FEMA. FEMA then ultimately approves them and then sends them back to us. I hope that answers your question.
Follow-up. So then another question, because I know in your last visit and while it was dealing with some different things, you talked about staffing shortage. So will that impact this request? Are you taking on additional responsibility, I guess is what I'm asking, that you don't have the capacity to take on?
That's a great question, and as I hope you will all be happy with, I'm not asking for additional personnel for that. We can do that with contract staff augmentation, specifically to mitigation, and that is another area within the division of the back to Representative LaMarca's earlier question, that 400 to 500 contractors helping out with that. We would be utilizing contract staff aug for that.
I have one other question. It's in reference to the hazard mitigation.
Yes.
Revolving loan program. I had to stop and think about it. With that program, is there going to be a conforming bill that we need to create to actually implement and then provide those funds?
So I am a great operator. I am not a great legislative kind of guy, but I've got one of the best in the world, or in the Senate, if you will. So if you don't mind, Representative Andrade, I'll bring up Luke Strickland, our chief of staff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, there's language in the governor's recommendation.
Okay. Thank you.
He's a man of few words.
I really am appreciating the team effort here. Agencies and staff members jumping in. Members, any other questions? Seeing none. Thank you very much, Director.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, our next presentation would be from the Secretary of the Department of State, Cord Byrd.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Chair Andrade, and members of the committee for inviting me here today to talk about Governor DeSantis's recommendations for the Florida Department of State. Elections integrity remains a top priority for Governor DeSantis, and his Framework for Freedom budget provides $3.1 million in funding for the Office of Election Crimes and Security, $811,750 for the modernization of elections websites, $3 million to modernize the Florida voter registration system, and $1.3 million to modernize the campaign finance system, a system which I'm sure you're all familiar with. To further demonstrate his support for Florida's elections integrity, Governor DeSantis's Framework for Freedom budget contains $962,969 for a live call center services to support the statewide voter fraud and statewide voter assistance hotline in both English and Spanish. We're also grateful to the governor for including $525,000 to support designated Florida Main Street communities to assist them in recovery efforts and business development.
These funds will include market research and analysis, as well as training for business development in your communities. Finally, Governor DeSantis's Framework for Freedom budget provides $6.2 million in funding for historic preservation and cultural museum grants, to include $5 million for the Cultural and Museum Grant Program, $827,370 for historic preservation grants, and $350,000 for the arts grants category. Mr. Chairman, that's our presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Secretary. Members, any questions? Representative Lopez, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Secretary. I have just one quick question on the Florida voter registration system modernization. Is it your hope, and I'm certain it is, but will this modernization help us to ensure that those that are not eligible to vote do not receive voter registration cards, or any indication at all that they are permitted to go vote? That's a big concern of mine. Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a great question. So that's a longer conversation. So this is for the OVR, the online voter registration system, which needs to be updated and modernized just to make sure that it functions. These are for people who register online, but there are other methods for people to register to vote, whether it be at their local supervisors of elections office, a mail-in voter, voting registration. Some of that's governed by federal law. And so I know that is a concern. I'd be more than happy to talk to you offline about how we can improve that process.
Representative Placencia.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. How many people currently work for the Office of Election Crimes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So currently we have approximately 4 individuals who are working there. But just some of those individuals are housed over the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. So when the budget recommendation was made last year, some of them were housed in the budget over at FDLE. Some of the Division of Elections individuals in my general counsel's office are also assisting. And we're working on fully staffing the office, which is why we've asked for additional funding so that we can fully staff it as the governor envisioned it when it was created last year.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Follow-up. Are any of them sworn law enforcement officers?
Recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do not have any sworn law enforcement officers in the Department of State. All the sworn officers are with FDLE.
Thank you.
Any follow-up? Further follow-up? No? All right. Representative Market, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here, Secretary, and for your service. You went through it pretty quick, but the breakdown regarding the cultural arts and grants, how is that broken down?
Yes, so that's $5 million for the Cultural and Museum Grant Program, $827,000 for historic grants preservation, and $350,000 for the arts grants category.
Okay. Thank you.
Members, any further questions? Representative Burfield, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's actually a follow-up to Representative Palencia's. Is there a need for additional officers for that Office of Election Crimes?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And there absolutely is. It's a very data-driven endeavor. So we have 14.5 million registered voters in Florida. We also are part of the ERIC system, so we get information from other states. There's 31 member states in the ERIC program. So we're constantly receiving information from other states. Those require investigation. Sometimes that's requiring getting records from other states. And I would just remind all of the members that we provided on January 15th, as required by statute, a report on the Office of Election Crimes and Security and the work that we did. So when the office was created on July 1st of last year, up until the report was due, we initiated over 2,000 investigations, and which have led to multiple prosecutions. And we want to continue that work, because it's always a balance between access to elections, but also election integrity. And so I think that the report supports the work that office is doing as envisioned by the governor.
Thank you very much, Secretary. I did have one question. As you're familiar, we funded 15 FTE for this initiative last legislative session. It's a valid, necessary effort the state's undertaking. I think I heard you say that there were 4 FTE that were filled currently. Is it an issue with finding staff that are available to provide the services that are needed?
Thank you for the question. So once again, if you remember, so the office was, went in, by operation of law, started on July 1st of last year. So in the midst of having a statewide primary, a statewide general election, Director Antonacci, Pete Antonacci, was the first director. He had law enforcement experience. He had been an administrative law judge. He was supervisor of elections in Broward County. So in a very short amount of time, he put together a small team who did a lot of work. Tragically, he passed, and then Scott Strauss finished up the mission through the election. And so since then, because of the lessons we've learned, the investigations, working with FDLE, we are rebuilding the office because, quite frankly, because of the small numbers and the short amount of time, we had to use other parts of the Department of State to provide support, such as for IT. So I had someone, one person who was working in Division of Elections that was helping them with their IT needs, which is part of what the additional funding will do. And we have been working and having meetings on how we're going to fully build out to accommodate the additional resources that hopefully y'all will provide.
Thanks, Secretary. Members, any further questions? All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee.
So, Mr. Chairman, joining us today from the Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles is Director Kerner, and this is because he's a cabinet agency. We offer our governor's recommendation, but believe that the director would be in lockstep with us in terms of our recommendation, and hope he'll say some good things about our recommendation today. I do want to point out a couple of things and allow the director, if you'd like to speak to this slide. We offer the governor's pay package, which includes a component not only for all employees for 5%, but also hard-to-fill positions, some of which may speak to the issues that the secretary Bird was speaking of, with auditors and folks who have some very specialized capacities, and then for law enforcement that I believe Director Kerner will speak to in just a moment. And then we also have a few other items, and I'll yield now to him with your permission.
Thank you, Chairman Andrade, Vice Chair Cheney, Ranking Member Silvers, and to all the honorable members of the subcommittee. My name is Dave Kerner. I have the honor of serving as Executive Director now of Florida Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles, having been nominated and appointed recently by Governor DeSantis on January 6th, and serving in that interim position until my confirmation by the Cabinet on January 17th. And I am here in great support, and it is an honor to be part of the presentation and to answer any questions as to the recommended budget of Governor DeSantis and Framework for Freedom budget. And I'll go through some of the major items that have been listed here on the LBR request and now adopted by Governor DeSantis. The first one is state law enforcement officers, $32.5 million, as you know, and as all of you have been very supportive in the past session of uplifting our law enforcement officers through how they're paid fairly as state law enforcement officers. Of course, there's a lot of competition in the law enforcement market throughout the nation to recruit and retain good officers, and certainly local governments oftentimes have the ability to pay more. But the state law enforcement officers are uniquely passionate about their positions, and I'll speak to the 2,000 of Florida's finest, the state troopers of the Florida Highway Patrol. And before I go further into this item, I want to thank each and every one of you that reached out to me regarding Highway Patrol Trooper Turner, who was shot in Pasco County during a pursuit last Saturday. He is recovering very well, and we greatly appreciate the support and love that each of you have put into his life. So the state law enforcement officers, the $32.5 million is to accommodate and execute on the prior raises that were given through the legislature last year, and also the merit plan that has been enacted through Florida Highway Safety Motor Vehicles for the Florida Highway Patrol. The $10 million motorist modernization project is to continue phase two. I know that MOMO has been around the legislature for a long time. We've completed phase one and with great progress, quite frankly. And so this will help us execute on phase two. Computer-aided dispatch and records management system for the Florida Highway Patrol. As you all are aware, law enforcement, at least on FHP, since 2002, we have used computers, we have used automatic vehicle locators, in-car printers, an 8-part camera system within our vehicles in the black and tans. That technology needs to be upgraded. It's an officer safety issue. It keeps those troopers safe, and we appreciate your support of that item.
aircraft replacement purchase of $4.5 million. The Florida Highway Patrol has a fleet of about 9 aircraft, all single-engine pistons and one twin-engine piston that is actually from 1967. A lot of these aircraft are outdated. We use them for a variety of patrol and operation purposes, including traffic enforcement, pursuit intervention, and right now they're deployed in Marathon in assistance of OVS. Then Florida Highway Patrol Central Florida Expressway traffic enforcement. As I understand this item, it's really a contract between the Florida Highway Patrol and the Expressway Authority to have 7 more troopers and another sergeant to patrol and enforce the laws on that portion of the system. I think overall this budget really speaks to Governor DeSantis's support of law enforcement officers and also his emphasis and focus on serving each and every Floridian through our Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles, whether it's licenses, registrations, our visitors have to interact with this department as well. We're very proud to carry that weighty responsibility, and certainly this budget would help us to continue to execute on our very important mission. With that, Chair, I'll take any questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Members, any questions? All right. Well, welcome back to a committee meeting, sir, and congratulations on the new job.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, that concludes our presentation and from our agencies, and thank you for allowing me to introduce those agencies to you today. We appreciate the opportunity to serve, and thanks to your staff, to Greg and everyone. I know they work quite a lot with our staff throughout the year to fashion what we do, not only in session but outside of session. So
thank you very much, Mr. Mims. You don't get off the hook just yet. I think Representative Daly might have a question for you.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mims, I'll be brief. Is there someone in your office or otherwise that can put me in touch with the right person for the State Guard?
For the State Guard, yes. I think we can do a follow-up. They've already left, right? So we can do a connection offline.
Just to be clear, thanks, Mr. Chair. Just to be clear, not through the National Guard. Whoever actually is overseeing them directly to the governor's office would be great.
Very good.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Absolutely.
Members, I want to thank the governor's office. I just want to thank the governor's office and all the agency leaders who have now left the room for being with us today and answering our questions. We appreciate the time you've all taken to be with us today and to help us evaluate this proposed budget. This concludes our committee agenda today. If there's no other business before the committee, Representative Placencia moves, we rise. Meeting's adjourned.